Ready? All right, in Genesis chapter 49, last time in chapter 48, we've been seeing where Jacob is preparing for his own death. He's preparing his, he talked with Joseph and his sons. Last time he blessed Joseph's sons. Again, we see against the tradition of their day, the Lord used the younger over the older, as with Joseph's two sons there, with Ephraim and Manasseh. We'll talk a little bit more about that this morning, but not much. But just know that we've seen all through since Abraham. Well, actually, it goes back further than that. But in this lineage of Abraham, it's always the younger who takes precedent over the older. And so, as far as the sons are concerned, and we've studied that before, that wasn't common practice in their day. It wasn't their tradition. It was always supposed to be the older before the younger. But that's not how the Lord always planned it. And so we'll see some more of that part of it today. Today we see more of Jacob preparing for his own death by giving blessings to his own sons. And then towards the end of the chapter, we see his actual death. If you remember, Abraham and Isaac and their wives were all buried in Mamre, in the land of Canaan, in a burial, a plot of land that Abraham had bought from one of the kings of Canaan. He had bought that for a burial plot for his family. And so that's what it was used for many generations. It was used for that. Now, chapter 49, verse 1, "And Jacob called unto his sons and said, Gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days." Now, remember, they're still in Egypt. They don't leave Egypt till Moses' day, but they will temporarily leave Egypt, of course, to go bury Jacob, but they will come back to Egypt and live there for some time. And so Jacob is there in Egypt when he actually dies in the land of Goshen. And you notice he says to his sons, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. What are the last days? Every time, I guess every time you see it in the scripture, referring to the end of days, we see the last days, the end of days. It's what's going to happen towards the end of life as we know it, is the end of the world. This goes with Israel, of course. We've seen in our studies in other places, in Revelation, Daniel, Ezekiel, other places, all through Genesis, through what God promised to Abraham and to his descendants. A lot of the things we see prophesied about concerning Israel has not taken place yet. Some of it has, but a lot of it hasn't. A lot of it doesn't take place until towards the end of the tribulation. And some of it not even until the millennium. Them possessing the land forever does not happen until eternity, till after the final judgment. So there are things that they were being taught by their fathers and from Abraham on through that they expected might happen in their day. But it didn't. And remember, Jacob Abraham and Isaac and Jacob all taught their sons. They were going to be the beginnings of many people, a great nation. That great nation has not come about yet. It would come about. It would. These 12 sons would be the heads of the tribes, or the beginnings of the tribes of those, of that great nation. He says, gather yourselves together and hear, ye sons of Jacob, and hearken unto Israel your father. Why? Again, we see both names mentioned here. And again, I'll tell you, this is my thought on this, okay? I can't prove it. Maybe somebody else can help me with that sometime. But Jacob is referring to his him being the head of the sons, the family there, and Israel, him being the father of the tribes, the 12 tribes, the nation of Israel. He's the last single head, if you will, of those tribes, of the promise of Abraham. Reuben, this is the firstborn. Thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Sounds like he's building him up, doesn't it? He's talking big about Reuben here. And again, Reuben being the oldest. Unstable as water. Okay, now he turns on him. Thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, then defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. If you remember the story back in chapter 35, back when they were still in the land of Canaan, Reuben went in unto Jacob's concubine and slept with her, and it was, and it's, if you go back and look at that, we won't do it this morning, but it's only one verse, one or two verses. It's not, there's not a whole explanation given there. But then we also see in other places where Reuben never really takes on the leadership of as the older brother. He never steps up to the plate. He tries a few times, but then it's almost like he cowers down to the rest of them, like he thinks he's outnumbered, but he doesn't really take charge like he should have as an older brother. So although Jacob recognizes and tells Reuben, you know, he says, you're the beginning of my strength. You're the beginning of the nation of Israel. You're the beginning of the tribes. And excellency in dignity, he's well thought of. Excellency in power, he's a strong individual. But he's not what he ought to be. And he had this sin hanging over him also of defiling his father's bed. Simeon and Levi, or brethren, instruments of cruelty, are in their habitation. Simeon and Levi have the same mother. And he says, oh my soul, or he says, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. Remember, Simeon and Levi were the leaders of the group that went in when their sister was taken captive by Shechem, was that his name? And they went in and led the others into destroying the whole city, all the males in that city, killed the whole, wiped out a whole city, and then took the women and children as captives. They did a cruel thing. It was what had been done to their sister was not justifiable. It was not what their reaction to it was not justifiable to what had happened. In other words, they could have just killed the man and maybe his father, and that would have been enough. But they, instead, they wiped out a whole city and then took them captive, what was left captive. He says, oh my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly, mine honor, be not thou united, for in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they digged down a well. They dug a hole for themselves, is the way we would put it, a deep hole for themselves when it came to what they did. It was other than with the grace of God, it was unforgivable what they did. In human eyes, it was an unforgivable thing. It was a very cruel thing that they did. And he talks about how things were done in secret between these two. These two brothers stuck together like glue. You know, things they did, they communicated together. They communed together in secret and did things behind the other's backs and things that weren't acceptable to their father. Cursed be their anger. Remember, they did it out of anger. If you go back and see it, read that story. For it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Now, it's my understanding, these two men, their tribes did not possess a portion of the land in Israel. When it came time to separate the land in Joshua's day, Simeon, and I just looked at this before and I should have wrote it down, but I, if I remember right, his tribe was allowed to live within the boundaries of one of the other tribes. I think it was Dan. I can't remember. But anyway, his tribe was allowed to live within their boundaries, but not be a part of that tribe. They were still separate tribes, but they were allowed to live there. The Levites, remember, were the priest. And the priest did not inherit their own property. They had cities. There was several cities around in different provinces, in different tribes that the Levites possessed, but they didn't have their portion of the land like the rest of them. So that was the curse that was upon them. That was the consequences of what they had done. In verse 8, we see Judah. Thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. What about Judah? What about the tribe of Judah? Well, that's where everything happens in Israel, isn't it? All the important stuff, all the good stuff, if you want to put it that way. Judah, the part of the land of Canaan that Judah will inherit, will occupy, will be where Jerusalem is, Bethlehem, some other places of renown that we see in the scriptures. The Lord himself will be, when he's born as a babe, he will be born in Judah. He says, thou art he whom thy brethren shall praise. Talking about the other 11 tribes are going to praise him. Thy hand shall be in the neck of thine enemies. Thy father's children shall bow down before thee. Now remember, up until the time of Nebuchadnezzar, no king had ever conquered Jerusalem. They had never conquered the land of Judah. They had always been able to take care of their enemies, with God's help, of course. They had taken care of their enemies. Thy father's children. Who's he talking about? The other 11 tribes. The other 11 tribes shall bow down to thee, before thee. Why? Well, what happened in Jerusalem? For the temple was built, wasn't it? That's where Christ was born. Again, there were several things that took place in the land of Judah that were very significant in the scriptures. And when we get to the last days, where's a lot of that going to take place? In the land of Judah, is it not? Around Jerusalem. Judah is a lion's whelp. In other words, a young lion. From the prey, my son, thou art gone up. He stooped down. He couched as a lion. and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? We hear Christ talk about as the lion of the tribe of Judah. The scepter shall not depart from Judah. In other words, the kingdom is not going to leave Judah ever. Now, we know right now there's not a king in Judah. There's not a king in Jerusalem. Hasn't been for some time, for a long time. But it is still, according to God, it is still the capital of Israel, the nation of Israel. It is still where the throne of David is, figuratively speaking. It is still where the throne of David is. It's where it will always be. All through, not just now, not just through our time, but through all eternity, the throne of David, it says, will always be in Jerusalem. Nor a lawgiver from between his feet unto Shiloh come, and unto him shall the gathering of the people be. Now, when the kingdom split after Solomon died and his son couldn't keep control of the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom, and they split, you had a king in the northern kingdom who was not of the tribe of Judah. He was not of the true lineage that he of David. They had their own capital. It was no longer in Jerusalem. But the Lord says the scepter shall never depart from Judah. Just because there was two kingdoms doesn't mean that the other kingdom was correct, was right. They were never right in what they did. Binding his foal unto the vine, and his ass his colt unto the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine, and his clothes in the blood of grapes. His eyes shall be red with wine, and his teeth white with milk. And he talks big and good here of Judah. Judah, there's great things going to happen in Judah. Zebulun, in verse 13, Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for an haven of ships, and his border shall be into Zidon. Some say that this is around the Sea of Galilee. Some say it's on the Great Sea on the coast of the Mediterranean. Either way, Zidon, if I remember right, was on the coast of the Mediterranean. These are going to be sea dwellers, fishermen. Where do we know that from? Well, we know the apostles were fishermen, some of them. But also remember, they were from around the Sea of Galilee in the land of Judah or Judea at that time. Issachar is a strong ass couching down between two burdens. And what is an ass or a donkey? It's a beast of burden, is it not? That's what they're used for. They're used as pack animals. Watch a Western. You'll see donkeys used for pack animals. That's the best example I can think of right offhand. But it, you know, even our Lord, when he came in to Jerusalem there at the end of his life, he rode on a donkey, did he not? His mother rode a donkey to Bethlehem while she was pregnant with him. And he saw that the rest was good, and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear, and became a servant unto tribute. Now, part of this, some say Issachar, the part of the land that he inherited was where a lot of the farming took place. They bear the burden of the nation. They fed the nation, in other words. So that's where some of this comes from. Dan Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan shall be a serpent by the way, and an adder in the path that biteth the horse heels, so that his rider shall fall backward. I have waited for thy salvation, O Lord. Now, Dan is where Samson came from, one of the judges. The other judges we don't see much about, but at least Samson, I know for sure, came from Dan. Dan was more of a warrior-type tribe. They were a militaristic-type tribe. Dan, if you turn over to Revelation chapter 7, where it talks about the 144,000 during the tribulation, Dan is not listed. We'll start with verse 4. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. Of the tribe of Judah was sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Reuben were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Gad were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Asher were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Nephilim were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Manasseh were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Simeon were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Levi were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Issachar were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Zebulun were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Joseph were sealed 12,000. Of the tribe of Benjamin were sealed 12,000. Now you see who's there instead of Dan? Manasseh. Manasseh was the son of Joseph. Remember what Jacob did in the last chapter, chapter 48? He adopted Ephraim and Manasseh as his own sons. We don't see Ephraim because some say that Ephraim, and there's places that talk about Ephraim taking on Joseph's part. I don't understand that part of it, but Manasseh, anyway, remember, he was going to be the more favored son of Joseph. So he's listed here instead of Dan. At least in what I studied on this for this morning, and I went back and looked at some notes where I'd preached in Revelation, I don't find anywhere where it would tell us why that was. There's lots of speculation out there, but there's nothing that tells us why Manasseh is named in Revelation and not Dan, and why Dan is mentioned in Genesis 49 and Manasseh is not. So I don't know. But Dan also, in the time of the kings after Solomon, was in the northern kingdom. Remember, there was 10 tribes that went to the northern kingdom. Dan was the main one that accepted false god worship, pagan worship. There was a major religious worship center, if you put it that way. It was in Dan, and so that's one of the speculations, is that they claim that maybe the Lord removed Dan, the tribe of Dan, because of that and replaced him with Manasseh. I don't know, maybe, but there's nothing really that tells us why. In verse 19, Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Another fighting group in this is Gad. We know Gad was overthrown with the northern kingdom, like the rest. They were the ones that were supposed to be helping along with the tribe of Dan, and were supposed to be the ones that were supposed to be protecting the land from a northern invasion for sure, and they were overtaken. But he says they shall overcome at the last. So in the last day, they're not going to be overtaken. So even though they were in the past, there is going to become a time where they're going to they're going to stand strong, and there's not going to the Lord will be with them. Verse 20, out of Asher his bread shall be fat, and he shall yield royal dainties. Asher is the bread basket. We talked about Issachar and his being where a lot of the crops were grown, but Asher is even more so. The bread, his bread shall be fat. In other words, this is where a lot of the crops were grown, especially the crops of wheat and corn, things they would use to have made bread with. And he shall yield royal dainties. He's Danishes. That's what we would call it today. That's where the sweets were made. Naphtali is a hind, loose. He giveth goodly words. A hind, another word for deer, or a type of deer. He's let loose. He's running wild and free, and giveth goodly words. He's a good counselor. He's the one that people can turn to for advice. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. It's like a tree, in other words, with branches, strong branches, fruitful branches. By a well, he's got plenty of water. And you can tell by what we read here through the rest of this that Joseph is obviously the favored son in all of this. Now, we know Judah, of course. You would think, well, why wasn't Judah the favored son? Well, because he's going to be the one that the Lord's going to come out of. He's going to be the one the temple's going to be in. The capital city of Jerusalem's going to be there. A lot of good things are going to happen in Jerusalem. But as it's been all of Joseph's life, Joseph is still the favorite son of Jacob. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. He went through a lot of torment, didn't he, in his life? A lot of persecution. And it would be even more so to come. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From thence is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. Remember, Joseph in many ways is compared to Christ. He's an example of a godly man, how a godly man should be. You know, we look back at some of the stories of Joseph and when his brothers roughed him up and threw him in the well and then sold him off to a band of Ishmaelites to take off to Egypt. He had every right to hate his brothers the rest of his life, didn't he? We probably would have. I don't think many of us would have took that very well. We might have even, if we'd have got to power in Egypt like he did, who's to say we wouldn't have went back to Canaan and wiped out the whole family? And that's what his brothers did to the people that harmed their sister. When he got to Egypt, he became favored in Potiphar's house, was a servant there, became in command of Potiphar's, all of Potiphar's possessions and his house and all his land. And then look what Potiphar's wife did to him. Someone he thought he could trust. And someone, you know, Potiphar thought he could trust Joseph to be around his wife. And he could. Joseph wasn't the problem, was he? It was Potiphar's wife who was the problem. Many men, many good men, would have fallen for Potiphar's wife's advances. And then he was thrown in prison for that. Did he take it out on Potiphar when he come out? There's no mention of him when he comes to Pharaoh's house as the chief servant there, and then eventually becomes governor. Eventually he becomes higher than even Potiphar in the land. Humanly speaking, he had every right to go back, and he could have thrown Potiphar in jail for what he did, or had Potiphar's wife put to death for what she did. But there's no mention of that. He showed grace and mercy on these people. He could have been a very harsh dictator if he had wanted to be. He had the power. He was under Pharaoh. But it was his dealings with all those matters that impressed Pharaoh. He wasn't a bitter person like he could have been, or like he might have been if he'd have been someone else. You obviously see the hand of God on him, and the example that we see in Christ even is what we see in Joseph. And so that's what we see. It appears as though, you know, they haven't had a lot of years to spend together, but Jacob has seen that also in him. Joseph is a good man, a godly man, much more so than his own father. The shepherd and the stone of Israel. Those are examples. Now, these are both shepherd and stone are not capitalized here, but they're examples. He was an example of the good shepherd and an example of the stock, the stone, the cornerstone of Israel. Even by the God of thy father, who shall help thee, and by the Almighty, who shall bless thee with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lieth under, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of thy father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors unto the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. He really builds Joseph up here and gives him a good talking, and tells him, God's going to bless you in everything you do in your life. Well, he had so far. He lived through some tribulation and some persecution, but God always blessed him through all of it. Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil. Some say that this is a picture of some of the sacrifices that were made in the temple, where they would bring in the food and then offer it. They would butcher it, what we would call it today, prepare it for the sacrifices, and then at night it was delivered. Or it was divided up amongst the priest as spoil, as what they were, as part of their payment for doing their priestly duties. Benjamin was another one that was Jacob's favorite, but we don't see much about him here other than this. Now, verse 28, all these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spake unto them and blessed them. Every one according to his blessing, he blessed them. And he charged them and said unto them, I am to be gathered unto my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite. And this is the king that Abraham had bought the property from, the burial plot. In the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite, for a possession of a burying place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah his wife. And there I buried Leah. We haven't seen much about Leah, have we? No mention of when she died, how she died. But we see here that she was buried there with his family, with Jacob's family. So he remembered Leah was the one that was hated in the beginning of their marriage. But he thought enough of her to have her buried here, didn't he? The purchase of the field and the cave that is therein was from the children of Heth. And when Jacob had made an end of commanding his sons, he gathered up his feet into the bed and yielded up the ghost and was gathered unto his people. So Jacob passes away. He's of a ripe old age. He's lived a full life. He's at the end of his life, has blessed his sons, told them what their portion is. You notice there's no mention of him separating out his wealth. We don't know what he had. They obviously had enough that he had no problem sending money with his sons to pay for grain a few chapters back when the famine first started. Possibly he may have went broke during that time doing all that. I don't know. It doesn't tell us. At one time he had great herds and flocks. We've seen that in the past, but there's no mention of those things here. Some would say that by default all that would have went to Reuben, his oldest son. I don't know. He doesn't tell us. But whatever happened, there will come a time in Egypt when the people will have forgotten about Joseph and Jacob. And when you get to Moses' day, you see they had forgotten. A generation came up that forgot about where they came from and who they were, what had happened to them and why they were there. And things begin to fall apart for God's people there in Egypt. And he leads them out. Finally, it's time for them to go, and for the first time to go and possess the land. Remember, every time they had been there before, whether it was Abraham or Isaac or Jacob, they were never commanded to possess the land during that time. If it had been God's plan, he would have made it so. He could have, even as small as they were compared to some of the other kingdoms that were there, God could have made it so that they could have conquered the land in their day. But he didn't. He had a plan. He waited until many generations had passed and they had a great number of people, enough that they could possess the land and keep it, was the plan. And yet, even after he gave them the land, they still rebelled against God. They still couldn't understand and wouldn't understand why things were the way they were. They followed after, they didn't follow the commands of God for one and wipe out all the people that were there. They kept some of the people. They intermarried with them. They not only intermarried with them physically, but spiritually also. They followed after their false gods, which was strictly forbidden. God had told them many times, and he had told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, don't follow those false gods. And yet they did it. And now you see what we have today in Israel, a land of mixed people, a land of there's no really no evidence other than the Jews that are there. There's really no evidence of God's people there. I mean, you see Israel, you see the Jews and a nation that calls themselves Israel, but they still deny Christ. There may be God's elect there. We don't know. We know one day there will be, but not yet. So we'll stop there for today, and we'll finish up the book of Genesis next week, and we'll go on to something else after that.